All right, well, thank you very much. It's been really enjoyable to be here so far. And it feels like a really kind crowd, so I'm not really nervous, even though this is a new lecture for me. But I am using all the old tricks to keep the butterflies away. And let me assure you that you all look really fabulous naked. I like it. Keep it up. But, yeah, I'm a happy guy. They're all beautiful. So, friends, countrymen, technophiles, and kinksters. This is a call to arms, because this is a room that's filled with techno-optimists. And what we want is to, we're surrounded by Cassandras, who only see darkness coming with all of these connective technologies, with wearable computers, with drones, with Google Glass. All of this is bad. These are also usually the same hipsters who 5 years ago said that iPhones are the stupidest thing in the world, and now you can't pry them out of your hands, which always annoys me. But I want to be a Pollyanna. I want to be with a techno-optimist that says this is going to lead to more relationships and I hope deeper relationships. And it's obvious to everyone in this room that this is the start of one more information revolution, probably most akin to Gutenberg's press in the terms of how much more data can get out there, how much more fast. The thing about Gutenberg's press is that the technology spread very quickly. It was within 20 years all the European capitals were able to print out text that quickly. But for it to change society, when you read the books about that time period, that took more like a century. Some things changed very quickly, but things like governance and spirituality in the church took more like two or three generations to really incorporate everybody having a voice. You know, it allowed the church to print dispensations to relieve you of your sins for a certain cost, which is a really good angle, by the way. But it also allowed Martin Luther to print tens of thousands of tracts and cover Europe in that and create the great Protestant split. And so I think we're just at the beginning of this sea change that the internet and the connective technologies are going to bring. So what we hear about is Cassandra's wailing about invasions of privacy, and these are very real concerns. But I do believe that, like with most technologies, we mostly use them for good and to find each other. I think a great example is the telephone. You know, it's not good that there are wiretaps. It's not good that senators call you during elections over and over again. But mostly you use the telephone to connect with friends and family and to do good things. Maybe it's just me being a little bit too much of an optimist, but I see most technologies moving people forward in a little bit more humanitarian manner. And my thesis really comes back to that line from Chinua Achebe, who said, the point of life is other people. So my focus is on relationships and how these things might focus on relationships. So today I will be your Pollyanna, and I will be singing in the meadows. I really should just have a gif of myself doing this, actually. That would be a good improvement. And just a quick aside, I'll often use the term Google Glass in this talk. And it's something you know, but it's more of a keyword for the technology that will be coming, you know, whatever they may be. Because as you all know, in consumer tech, the first thing to market is usually not the first one that's going to win. The first smartphone wasn't the big winner, and Google Glass probably won't be the sexy thing that takes off. It's whoever the next Apple is that makes it really nice, and everybody's going to want it. And it might be a glass, it might be a watch, it might be a piece of clothing like this, or a little projector that you hang here and you can talk at and then project your charts or your porn or your GIFs of your friends falling down the stairs over and over again onto a wall. So I'll say Google Glass, but what I really mean is these almost invisible connective technologies. And so I'm actually proposing three new inventions that are not prototyped at all. They're just in my head. But they are under development up here quite strongly. The cannabis of California has been very helpful in helping me craft these ideas. And Google is ruling me very heavily on implementing these by ignoring all the emails I send to them and instructing all of their employees to stop dating me, which I think that's what's happening. And so I start with Google Bed. Because sex sells and fornication pushes forward all the new technologies. Ah, you hit it. Next line is yes. I am aware of the irony of using a still from Black Mirror on techno-optimism. But you have... I know.
It's horrifying.
it is. Yeah, they would hate this, but that's part of the fun. But you have to take genius where you find it, and Black Mirror is the genius Cassandra. Most of the people are talking about the downsides of Google Glass haven't really thought it through that much. It's just kind of, I hate that shit. You know, when you take someone like this who's very smart about it, these are the kind of people that you want to be paying attention to. And if you want to pay attention to the optimists, then you read someone like Werner Vinge in Rainbow's End, who's probably, I think, the best sci-fi writer in the near future connective technology. That's what I'd recommend. So how will Google Bed help spice up your love life? Or maybe you don't need help spicing up your love life. Maybe you're doing fine just on your own. Well, good for you, master lover. But I'm going to use every tool at my disposal because I need the help, and I can already feel the year is starting to creep up on me. And I think it's this. I think I got that wisdom from what an old backhoe operator said to my dad on a construction site one day. And he said that you young boys know how to slather them up, but us old boys know how to finish them off. So it's all about figuring out how to do it better. And the first use that comes to mind of a system like this that would have always-on video of technology, it would have something like Siri that you could talk to and request any porn you'd ever want to see, any video. And you could watch yourself. You know, the girl I'm seeing here in San Francisco, the only porn that she likes is pornography of herself. So this is perfect. This is exactly what she's looking for. And it could, but it can also be easy to imagine something like this as a relationship deepener. If you've been recording your sex for all the years that you've been doing it, it means that on your 10th anniversary, you could have a bottle of wine, take 125 milligrams of MDMA, and lay back and watch yourself have sex on your first anniversary and take that walk down memory lane and reminisce about what that was like. You know, and I know Cassandra would say to me, well, that's fake, and it's not the, you know, the importance of the memory is part of the experience, but I think it's good to have both. You will still have your false memories that imprint and not remembering things quite right, but sometimes it's nice to just relive what actually happened and see what it was like to be that young and in love 9 years ago. So, and also, I think this could be useful in a therapeutic session as well. If you're going to a sex therapist because you're having problems in your relationship, sharing that video with your sex therapist of you making love could be a very helpful thing for explaining, this is what you're missing here. You know, let's go through this play by play and try to understand what's happening. It's not only something to get off on. I think it could be a tool for helping relationships. But the one that I really like, though, is useful for those crazy sex weekends where you might not have seen someone for 6 months and you finally get them and you just don't leave the apartment for the entire weekend. And you don't even, at the end of it, you come up for air and you don't even quite remember what you did. But luckily, there's the Google Orgasm Detector that takes a still photo every time that it hears a vocalization of orgasm. And so at the end of the weekend, you can sit back and start the slideshow and say, that's right, we did do it there and by the pool. And on the roof! I forgot about the roof. That was a really good one. And it's just, it's a fun way to be able to connect. And because what's going to happen is already Photoshop allows schmucks like me to do a pretty good job of editing photos. And it's obvious that that technology will be there with video as well. And you'll be able to use natural language to say to Google Bed, create a 10-minute highlight reel from our honeymoon and play that on loop into an orgasm. You know, you can request anything about your lovemaking that you want to see, and it'll be there. I think it's a really helpful relationship deepener. And the other thing that I think is really helpful from here in my nerd brain, if you heard the talk last night about having an Excel spreadsheet to keep track of the lovers that you know, which I think was really important. I think it's a way to honor lovers. In case you know, can't remember everybody, it's a way to remember who allowed you to grace their bed. So what I do is I keep actually a Google contacts list for lovers. And the Cassandras often call me an asshole for this. But if you had a Google bed and you could say you came back to San Francisco and see someone that you haven't seen in 6 months, and the last time you were together, as she went to the bathroom, you just happened to mention a Google bed to take note that her neck is so sensitive that she can almost orgasm from you licking it. And that's a beautiful thing to remember, and that's something I would love to remember. But if I don't see you for a year, that's probably going to slip out of my head. And this would be one way to help you be a better lover. What do you? It might sound false and cold to keep these records on people, but what's your motivation? Your motivation to be a better lover, to remember. And it'll bring us back, I think, to a point of etiquette of how much you use technology to remember about somebody. You know, if it's your girlfriend or your boyfriend, you probably won't need to be taking many notes. You remember, they're the most important person in your life. But then you have these secondary people that perhaps you see at parties all over San Francisco. One of those things where, wait, we met? Where the hell did we meet? You can't remember. But now you have a facial recognition that says you met 2 years ago. She runs a startup. You thought her kids were great. It puts you back into remembering those things you wanted to remember and takes you back to interacting on the things that you think are important. And it's a combination of enhancing this neurochemical memory system that we have that's decent and just adding some digital help to it, a synergy of both of them. And so, and the, yes, the, I do love scare the shit out of anybody. I just record that voice and have it play outside my house. That's his Dom voice. He charges $50 an hour for that. And so all these examples are focusing on partnerships and deepening relationships with people that you're already with. But I think another important point is how this is going to help for pornography. I'm waiting for Maggie to look up. But because what Google Bed will allow is even better customization of the kind of porn that you want to see. Now with, of course, Rule 34, anything is out there, and it's no longer rolling over and searching for it on your laptop and then having it play on the projector on your ceiling, which, by the way, is one – I know it's not that clever an idea, but when I figured out that I could take a projector and put it above my bed and then shine it on the ceiling and play movies there, I thought I was a genius. And I recommend it to anybody. Movies, porn, psychedelic animation, ketamine, it all just goes together perfectly. So there's my tip. But the long tail of pornography is going to be so much helped by these more simple ways to get pornography to yourself. And a cool thing if you had something like Google Bed is perhaps your partner is really into is only into redheaded strap-on lesbian play. And so on one of the screens, that's what's being shown. And then, for instance, like myself, you're mostly into pregnancy and lactation porn. That's being shown on one of the other screens. And even as you move around and change positions, maybe you go from squatting dog to crouching camel. I'm trying to figure out good ones to make up. But it'll even change where the videos actually are, so you can roll with it. You can see what you want to see. Exactly. That's the scariest one. I think of it as ketamine proofing a place. Like just being used to like not really quite being in control. But actually, and if anyone can help me come up with a term for that scary moment when you're jerking off and you almost jerk off on your laptop and it's that close to ruining it, but it's just shy and you didn't ruin it this time. I think we need a word for that. I haven't come up with it yet though. That would be very helpful. Actually, the Thespian Pirate broke two laptops in the last year that way. I think that this will really help with the porn industry as we get more screens and easier ways to buy it, easier ways to get a $2 app. We just have to figure out the new models. Porn is still in flux. And how we're doing this. And I think the Mayhems are a great example of how the models of pornography are going to move forward. You specialize in your niche of geek porn. You give away a certain amount of free content. You have advertising, and then people pay for the premium. And the long tail of the internet is just so perfectly designed, and it'll be so many more screens and ways for people to buy it as we move forward with these connective technologies. And the Mayhems are kind of at the top of the ladder. They have their own website. And it's great to see things like clipsforsale.com, which for any sex researcher is a very important site to see because it just has, you know, any fetish. It's pretty much Rule 34 in eBay-style online video sale. And it's a beautiful way to find anything you need because if your kink is Amazon tickle fetish, then you will pretty quickly run through the free content that's available on the internet. And you'll be willing to pay for something for the great studios here that charge $2 for their videos. So whatever it is, Pony Play, wrestling flicks, crush flicks, now you'll be able to get that movie quicker and faster. And so I'm hoping that this unsettling impact of the internet on pornography, the connective technology will help to fix that. And so everything I've been talking about so far is geared more towards couples. So what about you lone wolves out there or single pumas hunting for a partner? Then, I don't have to explain the obvious utility of these sites. In this room, people understand that it's really nice to be able to parse a bunch of profiles really quickly. But we also all know what they lack. They lack that pheromones, unquantifiable spark that whatever, especially a woman can walk into a blind date and within a minute or two say nope or hell yeah. And you don't know why what you're quantifying here about what works, but you have to be in person to get it. And so these only solve half the battle. And so luckily there's already the beta test in existence of combining both of those things, a little app you might have heard of called Grindr. Which you probably all know, but I'll just say it's a location-aware hookup app with profiles mostly for gay men to find each other. And it's especially interesting to see it used actually within a bar where you can look at all the people in this bar and parse their profiles. What it really is a modern update to the Hanky Code. What this really was, the Hanky Code was an analog radar system for finding kinks. It was a way to secretly find the others for whatever kind of weirdness that means to you. So if you put your yellow hanky in if you're looking for a pisser, or your coral hanky for shrimpers, or your red hanky if you're a furry looking to fuck a giant panda bear, and no one else has to know it. And that's one of the beautiful parts. For these often policed or mocked minorities, you can secretly find the others much more easily. And the great part about now as we're making it more digital is you can also specialize more. Grindr is more for the young, white crowd. You have Scruff for your bears and cubs. You have Recon for your fetish. And it's more specialization, and your radar is getting even more narrow to the things that really get you going.
Tinder.
What's that?
Tinder
for specializing in?
It's not specialized. They're trying to make Grindr for hetero couples.
Oh, good. It's a great idea, but they're not ready for it, I don't think. It will come. I think all of this stuff will come. It just will take some. We just need the next Apple to make the sexy device of it. I think that's gonna be one of the key breakthroughs in wearable computers. And eventually it's gonna. What's that? Yes, but
that's not gonna. Now called Down. They updated it and it's called Down. Out of the iTunes store.
Oh, that's true. Has it worked for anybody?
Yes, thank you.
Has these apps worked for anybody?
Farm animals or what? I don't know.
Yeah, off that. So hopefully, the gays are ahead of the curve, as the gays often are, but the heteros will be catching up. And so all of this analog radar leads to my next invention, Google Bar. And I admit that I'm not going to win any awards for creative app names or art from mock-ups, but I'm a scientist with a futurism bug. I'm not a graphic designer. But this is my vision, and this is actually gets me more excited than anything else I'm talking about, is everyone who wants to has some online profile sharing the things that you would tell to anybody at a bar. Your first name, the kind of stuff you do, perhaps links to your work if you want to share that, and that way you can find, you're looking for an illustrator? There happens to be one. Or you're looking for another psychonaut? Then you can find who's there. Because if you're out cruising, if you're a lone wolf or a single puma, of these 30 people, how do you decide who you want to talk to? All you have is looks, and that's important. That's a third of the battle. I like to think of, these connections of love as a stool, and you have your physical attraction, and you have your mental attraction, and you have your spiritual side. And this, you only get the physical, and you only have time to talk to maybe 3 or 4 people, and if you try to talk to all of them, you're just being creepy. So instead, we are all really good now at parsing profiles because we are the generation of writers. It was Clive Thompson at Wired that pointed this out to me me, and I didn't really think about it, but like no one has in a long time, we are constantly texting and emailing. Everyone else has been talking on the telephone. We are writers and we are readers more than people have been for a long time. And so the power of being able to run through people's profiles and look for the people that are more up your alley is going to be a really great connection of that unquantifiable spark that you can see along the intellectual profiles looking for people up your alley. And it does bring up some etiquette questions that they were addressing in the last one. Because, you know, it's a grand transformed technology and we don't know how it's going to go. But humans always evolve etiquette. You know, with the telephone, we decided that you can call someone the next day once or twice. That's a reasonable thing to do. If you call them that night 10 times, that's an unreasonable thing to do. We'll find where the etiquette falls in between on this stuff. And, you know, at a thing like this, perhaps messaging a person one time, a flirtatious message, seems reasonable. You go any farther than that, perhaps the person can share it with the bouncers, get the person kicked out, but there will be a whole invisible way of people talking to each other and parsing each other here, which I think is really exciting. Because how do you decide? I might waste my time with the blonde pharmaceutical rep by the bar when if I was checking the public profiles, I would have realized that the Jewish girl in the corner loves Dostoevsky and Robert Johnson, and that's who I should be talking to. You know, and I could have missed it. You know, and what I often hear from the Cassandras is that what I'm suggesting is homogenization, and what I'm looking for is clones of myself. But also, what I am looking for are people that are up my alley. You know, I'm sure there are lots of Republican accountants that I could be friends with, but I'm really looking for people that are more like myself. I'm looking for other kinksters and psychonauts and readers and writers. And I'm not looking for people who are just like me, but I'm looking for people who are moving in my direction, who agree on a lot of the basic things of what constitutes a good life. And so, because you can talk to everybody in this bar. They're all nice. I mean, all the hitchhiking I did all over the years and all the travel, the obvious thing, everybody's nice. Everybody's really kind. Everybody has at least one beautiful thing to tell you, but there's 6 billion people on the planet, and you want to find the great souls. So you want to use every tool at your disposal to eliminate people so you don't have to talk to them. So you have time to find the ones who are covered in jewels, whatever jewels means to you. And so you can run through here and then eliminate someone who lists their favorite magazine as Maxim, or who's never taken a psychedelic drug, or whatever your criteria is for not quite the right fit for me. Actually, the one that gets me the most excited, that could apply to many other things, is a reading app, because I know that my nieces and nephews will probably read almost everything on a Kindle or something like that, so there will be a complete list of every book they've ever read and how long it took them to read it and all of the passages they highlighted. And so I could have my radar set up in a room like this or walking down the street, and it pings me when someone walks by who has read 76% of the same books as me. Because yeah, exactly. That's good. And that's exactly what it's talking about, is taking this thing that we already have online and we already love and helping transfer it to the meet space. So I could be doing my Goodreads with the other good readers in here. Or you could be doing your Kinksters, the other Kinksters in here. Right now, I see a future where there's lots of invisible communications going on at the same time I'm giving this talk. People are whispering to each other, flirting with each other, learning from each other, making points. And so, yeah, because I want to find the people who read books like that. Because, you know, what is good taste? Good taste is people who like the same things that you do. That's what you're looking for. And one last thing that I think would be really important about Google Bar on the safety side is what I would see is something like New York City Health Department runs an STI app that is heavily encrypted, but you can share it briefly, like a Snapchat, to anyone you want. So just like you wouldn't, if you're going to go home with someone, you're going to use a condom, I hope, and you would also always share your STI status, and they can see when you were tested last and check on safety stuff. And it's the kind of thing that they get to see for a minute or two, they don't get to keep, but then you know you can be more safe in bringing someone home from a bar. And just like there'll probably be more reviews of people in general, you can check someone's couchsurfing profile and see that they're not a serial killer. There'll be Yelps for people, you know, Yelp for whatever kind of weird thing. For that voice, I believe it.
Exactly.
You know? Okay. Oh, really? That's great. Make check. Meet. Okay. Yeah. That's the hard part about doing near futurism is so often you suggest an idea and someone's like, oh yeah, I saw that last week. Well, fuck. Great. But fuck. Especially that guy. So what excites you about this is the radar part of finding the others. And that's the word, and I always use that others with a capital O, trying to find the people that are moving that same direction as you. Because you can set up for anything. If you're a fan of objectivism and cold, hard cruelty, you can use Ayn Rand's Atlasphere. You can find the other Randites in this room and take them home right now for that probably vicious sex that you enjoy. Why Toke Alone for stoners? You know, actually, I doubt you even need an app for that in the city. But and this is one I think really summarizes it. City farmers only. Because city folks just don't get it. This is one of the most beautiful examples. Yeah, and I come from farm country, and you know, it's not easy to find a mate like this at a bar or a church. You know, this is one of the best ways you have in competing as people are going by. And so, it's chicken soup, absolutely. You know, and it's easy to giggle about some of these issues, but if all you care about is being a sea captain, you might as well get that out of the way up front. This is definitely one of my favorites. Definitely one of my favorites. The Thespian Pirate turned me on to that one. But they're all beautiful souls. Believe you me. Red Beard. Oh, that's a good name. I like that. Popeye 22? I didn't know this thing. Popeye 22 is a good one. I love these guys. And so this is great for... I'm curious how many new members are going to come out of this talk for sea captains now. There's a lovable bunch, in all seriousness. And so this is kind of the fun ones, but also for the, I think the really important, for the more marginalized and outcast. I mean, I know in this room, it's people you're very used to seeing police communities, like queer, trans, sex worker, you know. I think we're in a room filled with kind of kids who spent elementary school and high school in that room under the stairs reading books and hoping that there are others out there like yourself, you know, and, you know. And so I think a really important one, the positive singles for people who have an STI and finding someone else who has that and understands what you're going through. And this is already happening online, but to have it happen at the bar would be something really nice because this is something that's harder to find. And this is the one that I think is the most heartwarming of everything I discovered in dating sites and my research is it's no longer lonely for people who are struggling with mental health issues. You know, that's one that's really hard to find a partner who might understand your specific brand of different. You know, and it's the kind of thing that you can't bring up right away in a date. It's hard to say right away that I struggle with fairly severe schizophrenia. And it's easier to get that out of the way right away. Just like if you're into diaper play is another one that unfortunately will just turn people off immediately. And it'd be so much nicer if you could just know right away, well, this, you know, that'll be okay. I can understand that. And the importance would be that these sites that are already really helping people find each other would be more and more right here in this room, helping you to find the people here who you might really connect with. But my real hope is that, I know the Cassandras argue quite rightly, there will be people who will just go on the internet from now on, and people who will do less and less in the real world, and that's absolutely true, and it's mostly not a good thing. But I also think that as the computers become more invisible and around us, it'll pull people more into the real world and more into finding each other. And I think a great way to explore that is games, and these are starting to really be important for people exploring their sexuality. This beautiful, I love this work, by the way. Because it's a really safe space to explore your kinks, and that's, you know, if you wanted to explore that, it's so much easier to explore that now with just the internet sites that have all of this information. And there are games like Socialtron, which is pretty much a Second Life where you can do anything you want sexually. And you can even turn off the consent button so people can do anything they want to you, which I think is a great, when you think about using tech and just the small setting things, a consent button versus a non-consent button in a game like this is a really important piece of design. It's the kind of thing you're going to have to really pay attention to. But if you want to check out necrophilia or anal rape or body modification or prostitution, you can explore that right here in a safe way and see what kind of brand of kink might work for you. Because so much about sex is about self-discovery. And these technologies are going to help you reformulate and create an identity. And I think this almost looks like the Google Bar in some ways. There'll be people here in person, but then there'll be an interactive level happening on top of it that can be as visible or as invisible as you want for people finding things. Yes?
Even to bring it back, I mean, necrophilia aside, just being able to play as a character of a different gender, mm-hmm. cited a lot about the importance of anonymity in online virtual worlds.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to, for a lot of people, that's their first ability to explore that side of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point.
It's not all necrophilia.
No, not yet at least.
So, just a quick thing. That sounds like a rather utopian view of sex.
Pollyanna!
come here, come to the microphone. Come here.
You've been talking for an hour.
I know.
You have to talk now, then do it in the microphone.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not too far behind.
Hi, I'm Random Heckler that's actually speaking next. So the problem is, Sociolotron, yes, very neat platform, non-consensuality in the rule set. That's the interesting part, is it's not a Second Life thing. There is actually a full D&D level rule set involving, like, you can make a demon by ripping someone's fetus out while they're pregnant. But you can do everything there. The problem is the word safe. Because at the end of the day, this is not you and a bunch of NPCs, this is you and a bunch of other people, and the drama inherent in this community has fractured it multiple times. So that's the thing about these online safe social spaces, is there's still people behind them. And I have watched some very, very nasty things happen in the world of Sociolotron over the past 7 years, but yes.
The nasty stuff later.
No, it's a great point, and I'm very aware that I'm pulling out the Pollyanna side of these things, but I also think that's important. It's very easy to focus just on the negative, and I think, you know, humans will do what we always do. Sometimes we're going to fuck each other up, and sometimes we're going to fuck each other with love. So I'm just focusing on the love side because, you know, I'm Vanilla Lex. I like pregnancy and lactation. So, so with Google Bar and with these kind of things, it brings me back to a quote from C.S. Lewis, who I really like, that there's nothing is more astonishing in a man's life than the discovery that there do exist people very, very much like himself. And that's what I hope the Google Bar app will allow, is to find the others, whatever the others means for you. And so then one more invention to go over, and I don't really need to cover too much about sex workers, because it's been covered quite well here before. But obviously the world of sex workers has already been transformed by the internet. And it makes sense that the oldest profession is also the most adaptable, with things like Eros helping to fill in the gap where the state has failed or has made things even worse. And now you have better screening, better verification, bad client lists, and all of this is really important stuff. And it brings me to my third invention, Google Kinkbot. Yeah, probably saw this one coming. This is an obvious step forward. There's already real dolls that are very, very lifelike, and there's already robots out of Japan that are very lifelike and can act as secretaries and couriers in an office building. Until they started. I've seen some new ones that are pretty good feedback and things like that. And it's only going to get better, obviously, to the point where it won't be unrecognizable, but it'll be something quite helpful. And there will be different layers of how this will be helpful. I think at the most basic level, it can be having a sex bot will be something that will be really helpful for learning about sex. Because in more advanced civilizations, it's common for a father to take
his son to a brothel and learn about sex there in a nice, safe environment where no one's going to laugh at you for screwing up, no one's going to laugh at you for asking stupid questions, and you can learn about your sexuality without all of that fumbling in the backseat of the Ford and being like, oh my God, I'm so bad at this, and then it only took 20 seconds. Instead, you can learn in a nice, safer environment, and I think a sex worker is a great way to do that. I think a Google Kinkbot would be another great way to do that. And in a more therapeutic setting, there will be robots like this, not just for sex, but also for helping children who are autistic, who are programmed well to help them understand why your reaction to this would be construed as abnormal in the world, and to help help guide you and make you understand in a more hands-on way how to adjust your behavior to make it to help fit you into society in a little bit more normative way. But the last way that I think is really the most helpful is a combination of a robot like this with a cam girl or with a sex worker. Because having a Google Kinkbot to have sex with is cool, but it's like masturbation and it's getting off, and that's a great thing. But what people are really looking for when they go to sex workers or to cam girls is they're looking for someone to talk to. I mean, you talk to any sex worker or dom, most of their time is spent listening to somebody talk. It's usually not that much about the old in out. And out, you know, the commercialization of it frees you to do what you to and really purifies the act more. Just like you would pay a therapist, then you won't feel bad about talking to him at him for an hour like you would your friend. It's helpful to be able to pay a sex worker and then feel free to explore. And the safety of this would be the sex worker could be controlling this kink bot from anywhere in the world. You could be working with anybody in the world. And there would be review systems, so you could say this was someone who was very helpful, someone who was very empathetic, someone who specialized in this type of kink, someone who's really good with a single-tailed snake whip. Whatever it is you like, it'll be easier to find someone to help control this kink bot. And it also means a rise of freelancers. More freelancer sex workers working in safer ways, less likely to get ripped off, less likely to get hurt, and more easy to work with anybody in the world. And I think the last part of the kink bot that would be really helpful is helping people explore kinky sex, because that's still one of the harder parts about being in this society is when you like something very different, but you can't figure out what it is. You're still trying to learn what it is. This is a line I think that sums it up well. In the title of this, I call us the dropout generation, and hopefully that'll be my neologism that takes off, that defines the whole generation. That's my hope, of course. But what I really think is that we're a lot like the Beats in the 50s, that on top, this is not the most exciting political generation. This isn't a generation that's as much standing on the ramparts and yelling as it is underground. The great changes are happening. The Beats had their poetry, they had their Bennies, and they had their underground stuff living their lives. And I think this Burning Man generation has a lot more of that going on. There's exciting art and movements happening, but it's happening in the communes. It's happening at the burner parties. It's happening more in the underground. I think part of that is because the internet, that allows for some fracturing society. It allows you to find more archipelagos of bliss. If you're really into making giant spiders who shoot fire, it would have been hard to find that if you just had the Village Voice, you know, 20 years ago. Now it's so much easier to find the others doing whatever you do. And so allowing kids to find each other and to find more honest information as we're moving forward. I think this wearable computer stuff and the internet is going to be so beneficial for those queer kids who grew up thinking that they're just so fucking different and there's no one else like them. And there'll be so many more novel ways for them to learn and understand. I mean, there'll be comics like this that'll help them really learn about sexuality. Yes! I always like to watch the wave of laughter on that one. That was a pretty small wave. Keep that in mind. But, you know, it'll help them remember, you know, so many places they grew up, and this is what, if they're gay, this is what they're told is going to happen. The rain of burning fire. And now it's so much easier. It's the Violin Against Nature, Art, and God. It's a Dory illustration from The Inferno. So the Violin Against Nature are the sodomites and the perverts. Yeah, that's why it's such a fitting punishment, because Dante was very good at making the punishment fit the crime. you know, of course, it's so much easier now for kids to find out that there are other people that think like this, and that's one of the most important parts. You know, and new modes of support, like this game, which you might have seen passed around the internet, for young trans children.
Yeah.
What's that?
NF for free, Ars Electronica. She won the Ars Electronica award to be the last year.
Really?
Yeah,
yeah. This is really impressive, Pete. If you didn't, you didn't see it, it's a small, simple game about the challenges of being trans. And you can play through it in not that long amount of time, but it's a great new way to get kids thinking about what challenges you're going to face if you're a 14-year-old trying to change your gender and how to deal with those things. And so what all of this leads to is a generation that will more easily be able to find their kink, their way to get off, their others, their whatever that means. This is a nice list. Unfortunately, it's not quite clear enough to read. But as Violet Blue said, normal sex is the kind of sex that you enjoy. And I think with all of this info that's available, and all these tools like Kinkbot, and the potential to interact more safely with sex workers, and early on in life to learn about your sexuality, I think this is going to make it so much easier for those kids who grew up different. And so that's my techno-optimism take on the future of fornication. I think Google Bed will lead to better orgasms and deeper relationships. I think Google Ball will help you find the others, whatever that means. And I think Kinkbot will help you exploring sexuality, whatever that might look like for you. So I'm the Pollyanna, preaching the powers of these emerging technologies. And I hope that they help you find the others, you know, for whatever weirdness that might be for you. So thank you very much, and enjoy the ride.
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually kind of happy that you called a lot that Google, you know, Google Kinkbot and Google Bag, because I don't want to see that GNU, like, you know, GNU Kinkbot. I don't know. I don't know, like, and there's one person who turns me off on this planet, and it's fucking Richard Stallman, really. Richard Stallman gets in my head, I will, there's nothing.
I wasn't aware of the, I'm a Brooklyn guy, I wasn't aware of the anger against these big tech companies in San Francisco.
You mean Google?
Yeah, just for the money that they have for gentrification.
But they all have money and a lot of privilege.
Yeah.
And
that's not, well, we don't need to, let's talk about fucking.
Yes.
So let's all go fuck. I have an apartment in the Inner Sunset my friends loaned me for the weekend. They're not coming back, so I have a lot of...
Well, I have to say, and I'm very proud of that, in the year 2008, I gave a Google Tech Talk, and it got censored. Why? I got an email for that. They never put it on the Google on the Google YouTube channel because of profanity and strong language or something, right? But it never left up. And I'm actually trying to get... Is anyone working for Google who the chances are high? I really just want a copy. I want to re-see that talk. Because I think I just talked the way I think they're not used to Europeans or something. I don't know, but
did you use the voice? I know the evil voice.
No, but the evil voice. You mean you speaking German? Yes. Okay. The Germans, they speak like this. Like for example, like shit. You know the concept of shit. Yeah. Okay. Shit in German is Scheiße. That's German. And in Austrian, because we are Austrians, it's more like Scheiße.
That makes sense.
So we are a little bit the Albanians of the German-speaking world. We have a very thick, slow southern accent. That's why everyone loves the Austrians, although they provided the world with Hitler. And everyone fucking hates the Germans because they eat shit in porn all the time. That's right. Yeah. Okay, so questions. Bring it on.
Not to Cassandra out on you too hard.
My life.
So one of the problems with humans is we're lazy as fuck. And so then we want to optimize things, right? You know, oh shit, man, it'd be great if I could find someone to get laid with right now. And so then, like, doing like what you say with the Google Bar kind of thing, you'd optimize it. Oh, these people like what I like. But the problem with that is then you get into these reinforcement loops of, now you're exposed, you're constantly being exposed to what you like, and that narrows you into this one specific zone. So you're not getting much commingling of stuff. Like what you said, if maybe this functioned that well, you would have never gone to the dominatrix training session that you went to that you described last night, and you wouldn't have been open to that. You may have, maybe you would never found out about your lactation and pregnancy fetishes.
Those are inborn.
Okay. Gotcha.
Some kinks are acquired and some are inborn.
Okay. But it seems like it's a huge problem in other areas of tech in general. Is just if you're trying to optimize something, then you end up kind of narrowing someone's view of life. It kind of shortens their purview. So maybe that needs to get built in too.
Yeah, and I think that's it's a great point because, you know, as I talk to my, you know, sources in the Grindr community, you definitely hear about a lot of addiction to this. You know, someone who's scheduling their Saturday every hour for 10 hours straight, you schedule a new lover to show up at your room. And that's just, I mean, that's how we live, but they, you know, they have partners telling them that this has become an addictive behavior, this is taking it too far, and it does enable things like that to happen. And it's always going to be a double-edged sword, you know? And you're right. It's, one of the challenges is going to be how we can tweak the technology itself to make it safe enough, but not too safe. So I would...
Well, it force you to explore.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like Burning Man.
Yeah. Well, I think the exploration thing...
Burning Man, fucking privileged wank fest, really. But
you had a good point. Like I might not have answered Craigslist ad if I had done something else. But everybody kind of has their radar set up for whatever thing there is, and you just kind of, you know, you're on the subway and you see someone reading that book that you like, you start the conversation. You know, you're always people. One thing I really hate is when people said, "Oh, you got so lucky that you got offered that position." It's like, no, I've been talking about this project for years. I happen to overhear someone talk about a bar. I know it inside and out. And I started talking to this person, and they gave me the job. It was years of you paying attention and working and paying, and it might sound like luck, but it was really you paying attention to the things that you really wanted to do. So I might not have answered the Craigslist ad, but I might have overheard some of the party be like, we need, you know, I need a bottom to show this off. And, you know, and I would have given that a shot. It would have came somewhere. It does frustrate the hell out of me, though, because, you know, if you picture that quantum theory universe where there's constantly branching paths and that there could be this perfect path out there that you could just, if you knew just what old lady to talk to on the subway, you know, and what I really picture is an Uber Google that could see all past, present, and future. And then above the head, it could have a glowing ball of how much you connect to that person. You know, I wouldn't know that, you know, 85-year-old guy on the subway is someone that I should talk to and will change my life more than anything else in the world. But I guess it's really, I just want clones. I just really want some clones.
I think it's just called God, and you have to pray a little bit more.
Probably God is what I need more of. That's right, the answer.
Okay, one more question, one more. Yes, please.
I actually have a comment and a question. If you go to beinghuman.org, they had a conference 2 weeks ago, and Helen Fisher and Justin Garcia talked a lot about the brain chemistry behind love and a lot about hooking up and what they're doing. A lot of the science that they're doing might inform some of these future apps that you're thinking of. Beinghuman.org. And on for TV, and you can watch it by section, and the third section is all about love and sex. The fourth section is kind of the future of like body modifications and things like that, which might also go along. It's a little creepy. Let's see. Our question is, what kind of public health education or just education would you want to see going along with this technology? You can't just throw a sex bot into, you know, San Francisco and expect people to just know what to do with it. You think there'd be some... San Francisco, maybe not the best example.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of responsibility that comes with releasing technology like this. And so what would you like to see to go along with it?
That's a great question. And for knowing about how to do it, I think everybody just kind of figures it out. This is something I really wanted on the slide. It watches your cattle fuck and tells you when they fuck, which I think is great. Talking about cattle at that. So there's a little bit of the information part. But and it's a really good point about how to do this stuff safely, because a recent study found that Grindr is increasing the STI rates in San Francisco and New York City because it's easier to request bareback sessions, and you can, if that's your, and that's what your radar is set for, you're much more easily going to find partners to do that with, and that is one of the dangers of it. But having technologies like this and how to keep them safe and how to, you know, I don't have a good answer. You know, how to integrate them and how to, I mean, I think the Google Kinkbot is really good because it's a place where you can safely practice anything, no matter how violent it might be. Just like you can currently watch porn that's drawn to see the stuff that you can't actually do to a human being, and that's an important thing. But yeah, I think a lot of this stuff we can throw out great ideas about how this might happen, what technologies we can create, but the really hard part is figuring out how it's actually going to affect the sociology of how we interact as humans. And that's why I like Werner Vinge so much, because he looks at what it might be like if there's a invisible communication system that we would all be using right now that's visually based, that can share, you would have little lights, blinking icons about yourself, sharing videos, you know, and what that means for interaction, especially with something like I cut this out of the talk, but I think it's an incredible point, is that we're 10 years away from digital telepathy. You know, all you need is Google Glass and a glove input system, which I already have prototypes of, and you can just sign and talk into your Google Glass. And that means I could be here talking to anybody in the world, and I could be talking to you about, hey, do you know her, and how can I hit on her as good as I can? Or how can we scam her out of money? Or asking my mother, how do you think I'm doing? Should I make this point? I mean, it's a gigantic idea that you can be talking to anybody in the world at any time invisibly, and the technology can't be more than 10 years away. And how that's going to change human interaction is far beyond me. But it's something worth thinking. It's something we have to think about, because these etiquettes will have to evolve, and us techno-optimists are hopefully going to be some of the first people thinking about it and moving in the right direction.
Thank you very much. Big applause for Lex.